Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the renowned graphic designer Milton Glaser is here in the studio with me. He's probably best known for having designed the I Love New York or I Heart New York logo, and for having modified it after 9/11 to say I Heart New York more than ever with the little black smudge. He has a new book out now about his creative process and about the narrative of his long and celebrated career. It's called In Search of the Miraculous, or One Thing Leads to Another. We'll talk about that, and we'll also have a conversation about reimagining peace and the peace sign as part of our End of War series. Milton Glaser, always a pleasure. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here with you.
And before we get to the book, I'm curious, what is the peace sign? And everybody knows it, the circle with the inverted Y, symbolized to you, and did it ever mean something different?
Well, it symbolized a moment in history. But what's very funny, because I was doing a little homework and reading up about the sort of theoretical justifications for how it came into being, and it's all nonsense. I mean, everything that was said about the creation of the sign and how it was done and the methodology is absurd.
Well, let me tell you what I have, and you tell me how absurd it is. And this comes largely from Wikipedia, which says it was originally designed for the British nuclear disarmament movement in 1958. It came to the U.S. shortly thereafter and was appropriated by the Student Peace Union in 1960. They then sold buttons with that symbol at college campuses, and by the end of the 60s, it had become the generic peace sign. Of course, not the only peace symbol. There's the dove, the olive branch, the V with the two fingers. But what's your understanding of the history?
No. My only issue is that the attempt to analyze it and deal with it as a rational system of objectivity, it was, in the explanation for it, a semaphore signal, one going straight up and the other going to the side, that represented initials that stood for nuclear disarmament or something, and a very complex series of steps that no viewer could possibly understand. So it may explain the process by which a designer arrived at a conclusion, but it has nothing to do with the intrinsic understanding you have of the object itself, which is essentially an abstraction and may or may not affect the brain in the right way. But one thing we have learned is that objectivity is a way of justifying what you do rather than a way of originating ideas.
Perception is subjective. As many of you know, we have a series running called End of War. We've been asking you, our listeners, if you think war is inevitable or if humans can ever abolish war. We've gotten hundreds of responses, and so now we thought we would ask you about peace. What would a new peace movement look like? And because we have Milton Glaser here, we thought we would talk about rethinking that peace symbol as a way of talking about reimagining peace altogether for today's conversation. So listeners, call us up right now and tell us if you think the peace sign is meaningful today, and did it used to mean something to you at one time, whether it does or not? Is it too associated with tie-dyed hippies from the 60s and not associated with a contemporary peace movement relevant for today? Or maybe it is. It is still out there. Have you been a part of any peace movements yourself, anti-war movement during any time, Vietnam, Iraq, whatever? Do you think there should be a new symbol of peace or even totally a new concept for spreading the idea of peace? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Do you think that the do you think that the peace symbol has been an effective messenger for its idea, even if people couldn't understand what it was literally trying to symbolize, as you were describing before?
Well, the process by which things enter into the culture is a complicated one. And mostly it's by recognition and repetition, that you take any object, any form, and repeat it often enough and link it to an idea. Eventually people begin to make that linkage automatic. So, you know, something that is a great symbol, for instance, the cross, which basically has within it an abstraction of the horizontal motion of the universe as opposed to the vertical motion of the universe. So fundamentally, in terms of imagery, you could see that affecting the brain in some profound way. But you realize that in order to complete that, you have to imagine the body of Christ suspended on it. And every time you see a cross, what it evokes in your mind is the body of Christ. But that is a long historical process for what is perhaps the best symbolic representation of an idea. But everything else, like a logo for Apple, first has to be linked to Apple by repetition. And it's only then that it becomes viable as an idea.
Let's take a phone call. Muriel in the Financial District. You're on WNYC. Hello, Muriel.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I've been thinking about this for a very long time, and I did redesign the peace sign because the sign, which actually originally meant ban the bomb, can never work. When you take a symbol that basically means its opposite, it won't work. It hasn't been working. So what I did was create a new symbol, which means I enter world and greet you with love. And it's a peace symbol upside down, broken into pieces that symbolize a person, another person, and the love that we greet each other in. And it looks a bit like a tree of life. It means that we can then take peace and contain it and activate it instead of the symbol that's current now, which just basically pours it out and lets people think that peace is something that's going to drop on them instead of something that they must reach upwards and contain and activate themselves.
Interesting. Thank you very much. And Muriel, maybe you will be the first contributor to a new page that we've created, because, folks, if you have a good idea for a new peace sign, we want you to share it with the rest of us. We've created a place on our website where you can submit an image of your design. And there is Muriel, who has already come up with one, and not for our purposes. So go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. You'll see a link where you can submit your reimagined peace signs. Milton Glaser, the designer, is my guest on WNYC. And in your book, In Search of the Miraculous or One Thing Leads to Another, the book is about the narrative of your body of work, really. It is the narrative. You present the work as a developing continuum. In the book, you say, it's fascinating to discover that something you thought was a brand new idea actually had its roots 35 years earlier. Talk about that.
Well, what I attempted to do, instead of the usual format for designer books, which is basically a way of presenting how smart you are to others and showing examples of your portfolio, what I really wanted to deal with, which is only done retrospectively, usually after the author dies, is show that every idea that you have is linked to an idea you had in the past and basically anticipates an idea you're going to work on in the future. And I've been very interested in sort of colonizing my own work. And rather than feel that the continuity of ideas represents a limitation of vision, to think of it as really an organic, inevitable consequence of anyone's work, that you do something that changes the way you perceive the world, and then you apply that shift in perception to the next thing you do, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's a richer and more interesting way to look at work than as a series of discrete, unrelated events.
Can you articulate some reappearing themes as a narrative of your career, how one thing has led to another, to quote the title?
Well, I think what I attempt to do in the book is to visually demonstrate that, how an idea of fragmentation or an idea of the use of black or the idea of stripes or the idea of illusion or whatever it is, basically just insists on recurring. I mean, in the same way that you have certainly preferences about what you eat, you develop a set of preferences. And the interesting thing about the development of somebody in the arts, in any manifestation of the arts, is the fact that the possibility for change is always present. One of the great limitations of the design profession that I profess to be part of is that it demands that you are successful and that you repeat your success. The worst thing about being a professional designer or professional anything is that it celebrates success, and that in that act encourages you to repeat what you already know. And what we have discovered about human beings is that development occurs out of a search in those areas where you are not confident, where you do not know what you're doing, whether you're stumbling in the dark, is a way that I sometimes put it, where you're moving towards some as yet unimagined solution, but in the process of moving towards it, you discover things you hadn't known before.
And yet you do not talk derisively in the book about, quote, cannibalizing your own work.
Oh, quite the contrary. I mean, this is a term that is derisive, but the opposite is true, that using your own work as a source for the next thing that you're going to do, which is, say, using that part of it that leads you towards failure and towards misunderstanding, is the best use you can make of your work.
Designer Milton Glaser, as we talk about his new book, In Search of the Miraculous, or One Thing Leads to Another. And as we kick off our project, inviting you to reimagine the peace sign. But some of you like it the way it is, like maybe Anne in Creskill. Hi, Anne. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Thank you. How are you doing?
Good. I'm good. I grew up in a hippie household. My parents were a little older than most hippies in the 60s. But peace signs were ever present. We had the mobiles hanging from the ceiling and all kinds of peace signs all over the house. We had peace sign necklaces and everything, and it's iconic for me. It's absolutely iconic. I think most Americans who were born in the 60s agree, you know, or even the 40s agree that the peace sign's iconic. But I do agree with Mr. Glaser about art, as he was saying before. It's very interesting how you are expected to repeat your success. And that's almost counterintuitive to the creative process.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Anne. Tony in Boonton, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Brian. Let me give you two quick perspectives. One, the olive branch has always been one of the most significant symbols of peace, because there must be something inherently in the olive that people have recognized really is a gift of stop in all of the insanity, and simplicity is the last step of art. So you don't need to be artistic. You don't need to be creative. The olive branch is already part of the concretized world. But the circle with the Y is an attempt to square the circle. You can't square the circle. So the most symmetry you could get in the circle is the Y. That evens it up, like the three branches of government, the ego, the id, the superego. Three has always been the symbol of universal symmetry.
You're going pretty deep into that. By the way, black olives or green olives? Never mind, Tony. I'm just kidding. but thank you for your call. And Milton, do you buy any of that in terms of what is communicated visually, three being the symbol of what he said, or
no,
some
sadly,
of what he was describing?
Sadly, I don't buy any of that. I think most of the justifications for why things are done are essentially erroneous or hypothetical, and done fundamentally to explain something that arises out of intuition and sometimes work. There's something about the nature of certain abstract forms that produce a certain effect in the brain. Unfortunately, we don't know how to quantify that effect very effectively. But I'm always interested in what justification designers or conceptualizers have for doing what they have done.
It reminds me of the section in your book called The Client Didn't Get It, where you write that the imagination feeds on failure and ambiguity, but that failure and ambiguity are difficult ideas to sell to a client who simply wants to move a can of tomatoes.
Yeah, precisely.
So talk about that. Is that frustrating for a designer? Sometimes do you think you've, you know, designed the most beautiful abstract, or if it's for a commercial client, something that will really, really sell the product, and the client goes, huh? What? Three arms coming out of a circle? It's supposed to represent what? Or whatever it is they didn't get?
Well, the complexity of being in the design business in general, as opposed to being a painter or an artist, is that there are three components, speaking of the word three, which is one of which is the audience, who is the either the victim or the beneficiary of this information. Two is the client, who basically has an objective to be achieved, mostly to sell something, either an idea or a product. And three is you, where your role is to see if you can satisfy other aspects of your own interests, like the imagination, like art, like beauty, and so on. And the problem being in design is the reconciliation of all those three factors. But if you have to name the most important one from a professional point of view, it is the public and the client. And only in the third case, where you occasionally have the opportunity to do something that matches your aesthetic objectives, does that come into play. So most of the work that you see in the design world is functional, effective, and not necessarily beautiful.
So I wonder what the can of tomatoes is when we're talking about a symbol for peace. What's the product? How would you approach designing symbols for things that aren't really tangible products?
Well, the first thing you always ask in any design problem is, who is the audience? What is the nature of the audience? What do they already know? What are their biases? What are they susceptible to? That comes under the heading generally of marketing, which is a thin sliver of that consideration. But why is it that people like certain things and dislike others becomes one of the most complex neurological questions you could possibly ask.
Yes.
This
and
is really a life for much more intelligent people that are in it.
Because these are people who want to draw and they should be neuroscientists.
Right.
I wonder if you saw this. It's going around on the internet, about 200,000 views in just 2 days. It's a video of Israeli peace activists addressing Iranians. And the message is, Iranians, we love you. Listen.
To all the brothers
and sisters
in Iran, for there to be a war between us.
First, we must be afraid of each other.
For there to be a war between us.
First, we must hate.
I am not afraid of you.
I do not hate you.
We don't hate you.
I don't hate you.
I don't hate you.
I don't hate you.
We don't hate you.
We don't hate you.
I don't even know you.
We never met an Iranian.
We have never met an Iranian, and we love you. That video ends with all those people saying, we love you, and actually they're cribbing your design, Milton. They're all holding signs with your I Heart theme. So as a master of communicating message, what do you make of their message?
I think it's terrific. I think it's disruptive, for the first thing. One of the tools you always use is what you might call the disruption of expectation.
How do you mean the word disruption there?
Well, you have a set of convictions or beliefs, and somebody comes along and they say, no, the opposite is true, and you believe it. Or you suddenly say, perhaps I'm not right. But that is almost the most difficult to do, is basically change someone's belief system. And you have to be very powerful and very insightful in order to do that. But the most effective things you could do in terms of a condition like this is to challenge the existing condition of the mind by offering an alternative. And this alternative is fresh and different and unexpected.
And so you wonder if by going people to people, they can break through the conflict that is government to government. Colleen and Wilton, you're on WNYC with Milton Glaser. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that I'm also an artist, and I did a series of paintings on symbols. So I had to do a bit of research. In the books that I reviewed, it was shown that what we would call the peace sign now is actually a sign for no nukes, and that the original sign for peace was actually a circle with three solid black dots. They would be arranged in a triangle shape pointing upward, but three dots. And that was the original peace sign, but that the no nukes sign actually took over as the peace sign in popularity.
Interesting. And various people are calling in with their different stories of the origins of the peace symbol. Someone else says it was originally meant to look like the footprint of a dove, which I guess if the dove has a very round foot. And somebody else, the original symbol was a semaphore for ND nuclear disarmament. So before you go, Milton, we're asking everyone in this series, is war inevitable, or do you think humans can ever abolish war?
You know, sometimes when I'm arguing with my wife in a rational way about any subject, and have control of the situation in terms of being able to express it in an objective way, I really feel good about my ability until something triggers that part of my brain that is irrational and unreasonable, and I realize I'm ready to go to war. It distresses me to think how little control I have over my emotional life. If that's characteristic of the species, it's a sad commentary.
Listeners, don't forget two things. One, we now have a place on our show page where you can submit an image of your design. If you want to reimagine the peace sign, go to WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. You'll see the link. And also on that very moving Israelis to Iranians, we love you video. We have a piece about it on our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Our blogger, Justin Krebs, has written about this, and you can see the video there. Go to it'safreecountry.org, our politics website, it'safreecountry.org. Milton Glaser's book is In Search of the Miraculous, or One Thing Leads to Another. Thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a doctor from Bahrain arrested after treating democracy protesters wounded in a government crackdown.